He was the first of his family to graduate college and immediately went for his graduate degree. After toying with the idea of public administration for a career, he took a job at a college, and the rest is history. Now Mike Martin is the new president of Florida Gulf Coast University, FGCU, as we've come to know it over the last 20 years, and he's here in our studio after about a month on the job. Dr. Mike Martin, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
We are talking with FGCU's new president. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call or connect with us on social media. The phone number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Martin, welcome to Southwest Florida and to WGCU. Let's start by talking about your career up to this point. You've worked in higher education in a number of state schools. Where have you lived before here?
Oh, I've got a long track record. I spent my early years at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, then 15 years at Oregon State in Corvallis, Oregon, then some time as dean at the University of Minnesota in Minnesota, 6 years at the University of Florida in Gainesville, which I enjoyed enormously and helped pull me back to this great place. Then I was president at New Mexico State in Las Cruces, New Mexico, chancellor of the LSU campus in Baton Rouge, and then finally, chancellor of the Colorado State System in Denver. So it's been a long and wonderful journey, and I also spent 1 year on sabbatical leave in Hawaii, which was really hard duty.
That must have been tough.
It was excruciating, but I managed to pull myself and the family through. So it's been a wonderful journey, and in each instance, I've learned a great deal and enjoyed it all much more than anyone deserves to enjoy it.
So you were in Florida before at the University of Florida in Gainesville.
I was. I was vice president for the Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences for 6 years and got to see the entire state because I had all the extension offices and research centers as well as campus programs. And it's one of the things that made this place to return to late in my career worth doing and appealing.
IFAS is quite the resource.
It's a wonderful resource, and it was a great job, and I learned much more than I left behind, but it was an experience I treasure.
So FGCU is about half the size of most of the universities that you've worked at before. Is a smaller school easier, or does it represent more challenges?
Well, I think there's some of each. I think a smaller school, of course, is closer to the ground, and you get a little more attention sometimes, a little more scrutiny, because you are transparent in so many ways. On the other hand, for me, this is the perfect size and the perfect place at my stage of my career. I really wanted to get back to a campus. My last job before this one was a system job and not a campus job. I came to appreciate in that experience how much I missed being on a campus. And this is a size campus where you can really get to know people, students, faculty, staff, friends, alums, in ways you can't at a large place. I was dean at Minnesota. You know, effectively three campuses in Minneapolis, 57,000 students. Wonderful place to work. Great to me personally. But at this stage, I wanted to get closer to the ground and closer to the action. And a campus this size, a smaller campus, offers that to at least a person in my stage in life and career.
So when you're at a larger school like that, like you mentioned, with 58,000 students, a big system like Colorado, how hard is it to move the needle if you want to make any kind of changes or do anything?
Well, I've always said it's a very, very large ship with a very, very small rudder. So you have to take advantage of every opportunity, but you can't move it very much. And I understood that. I mean, you have to be able to take the victories you can. But there's a huge momentum and a lot of great tradition, some of which is a little bit constraining at some of the larger institutions. This place, you know, being 20 years old, is enormously still nimble. And that's part of the excitement.
It's in the process of changing, too. You know, we've gone through some serious growth spurts with student population, more degrees, more buildings, an NCAA Division I sports program with basketball. But recently, there's been an emphasis on more slow and steady growth. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think we have to do two things. We have to now focus always on improving student outcomes. So we need to make sure the students we do take in, whatever number that is, have the optimal opportunity to efficiently, effectively, but with a high-quality experience, move on to the next phase of their life. So outcomes are important. And I think we have to build now in some key areas, particularly maybe in the graduate and research areas, as well as maintaining a strong undergraduate program. So I think we're probably in a phase of slower growth, probably not – I think no growth would not be appropriate, but slower growth. But much of that growth coming through improved retention and improved persistence and therefore improved graduation rates.
How do you plan to improve the graduation rates?
I think there's several things we're going to take seriously. One is we're going to try to assemble in a more holistic way all enrollment management activities so we do it together in a more coordinated. And most importantly, I think in that is to take a more interventionist, so to speak, approach to advising. We can track students. Now we've got to get to the point where when we discover that they're falling off the track, we go out and reach them. They don't have to come to us, among other things. I think we've got to come up with more creative ways to help students with financial challenges meet those challenges. I think we've got to take better utilization of technology by having more blended online plus in-class coursework and degrees to create flexibility. So there's a number of ways we can do it, and we're going to get on with that with great dispatch.
Mm-hmm. Are there any degree programs that you'd like to see the university add? Do you want to put any graduate programs or PhD programs in place?
Well, I think that's where I want to put some emphasis initially. I think that there are some programs yet to be added, and we've talked to the board about that, and they're kind of implied in our strategic plan, and we'll work toward that. But I think it's time for us to look at some PhD programs, not just standard doctorate programs, but PhD programs, particularly around some interdisciplinary areas for which we have a unique kind of a comparative advantage, so to speak. This is a place with a very interesting population and a very interesting environment, and we can do some things at the graduate level, at the doctoral level, at the PhD level that some others may not be able to do, or at least certainly not do them as well as we can. And you can grow those programs. You don't have to start them from scratch as oftentimes you do, say, with a professional degree. So that's going to be an emphasis of mine, and I'm going to meet with the deans I already have to talk about where we may be going and how we may get there the most efficient way.
Okay, so now I want to know, and I'm not going to hold you to it, but what kind of areas are you talking about here?
Well, I think there's a combination of things. You just look at the region we're in and how we can best serve it. First of all, we have an interesting population and an aging population. So there's some things in the health sciences related to health sciences, directly or indirectly, that we might want to pursue with greater intensity. We live in a very fragile ecosystem. So there's a very interesting possibility of building some programs around the interface between urbanization, rural population growth, the environment, the coastal fragility, et cetera. So I think around those areas are where we need to emphasize. And I also think we have to make an unambiguous commitment at this institution to be a strong and proactive partner with our K through 12 sisters and brothers. If we don't all work together to continually improve K through 12, we will all leave the state worse than it should be. So perhaps a doctoral program above and beyond what we're doing, a PhD in some education areas, would suit us well.
That would make sense. Now, what kind of involvement does the Board of Trustees have in deciding what degree programs to add or take away?
Well, I think the Board of Trustees' principal objective is to set the larger parameters for us and allow us then to come back to them with some proposals within those parameters. We're reworking slightly the strategic plan so that we can both get it approved by the Board of Governors, but also broaden it in such a way that the Board of Trustees can bless some core areas we're going to focus on and then allow us to see at what pace we can implement those core areas. Mm-hmm. So the Board has a very significant role in representing the larger population and ensuring that we stay on target for the things we've committed to and to kind of being an ongoing place in which we air prospects and get feedback.
Mm-hmm. So you came from a mining town in northern Minnesota.
Yes, I did.
You've been quoted as saying that your future prospects in the town of Crosby were to graduate high school and then go get a job in the mines. There's a lot of talk these days about mines. Coal's a hot topic. The mines in Crosby, of course, being for iron. Where do you see higher education fitting into outfitting young people to go forward into workplaces of the future?
Well, first, I think there may be some changes in the mining business. It certainly changed in Minnesota from when I was growing up. And there are more high-skilled and high-educated roles to play in an ever more mechanizing kind of industry. So there's that role to play. But I think we always want to create opportunities for the students we take in to maximize their range of choices. And, and where I was growing up, most people felt they only had one choice. And then the mine went dry in the community I lived in. We actually moved to another mining town, Hibbing, Minnesota, where my dad worked in the mines there for a while. But we need to give students the opportunity to see a much bigger and more adaptable future for themselves than a single corridor or a single outcome. And that's just something that education does for you. I always tell students at commencement, we call it commencement, not because it's the end, because it's the beginning of lifelong learning. And we need to stimulate that so that every student, if they want to go back to a community like I grew up in, has an opportunity, a real opportunity to have an enriching life there. Or if they wanted to pursue some other corridor in life, they have that opportunity as well. And that's what it did for me. I mean, public higher education opened up doors I never envisioned I could ever pass through. And yet I have. I mean, I would not be sitting here were it not for the fact that I was inspired by public education to continue to find exciting adventures both in my career and in my life.
Well, and having that level of diversity in your educational background going forward is allows you to be nimble, and that's how workers today are. You have to be ready to change. There's long gone are the days of working 45 years in the same exact job. I mean, you've had the same profession, but you've done this in different places.
Absolutely.
I recently read an article pontificating on the future of job growth in America, and a lot of it requires some level of technical training, jobs like programming, content creation. The premise is that jobs that require labor are going to be done by automation. Do you feel like it's becoming more of a requirement that everyone go to college as jobs get more technical?
I'm not sure it requires everybody to go to college, but I think everyone needs to pursue some post-secondary expansion of their capabilities and interests. College is a big part of that. I think there are opportunities for two-year degrees and certificates and a variety of other things that inspires one to continue to learn and adapt. But I also think that a college education has a great value above and beyond just the career path. I think we create better citizens, whether they serve on city councils or in the legislature or in church boards and PTAs, by having an educated populace. And I think we have a responsibility at a place such as this, FGCU, to open those doors up for opportunities for students to join us and then go out and make a difference. And I think it's one of the most important corridors, but not the only one.
So where do you see FGCU in relation to training for some of these kinds of jobs? Do you see the addition of any technical degrees or two-year degrees, or do you plan to grow more towards liberal arts degrees?
Well, I think we're going to – I don't see us getting deeply into technical education. We certainly do a good deal of that in the College of Engineering and certainly in the College of Health Sciences and other places. But I do see us creating a more enriched and enriching kind of experience for students by adding some dimensions that you would not get in a traditional technical education. And for those people who go some other place and get a technical education, we can certainly offer lifelong learning opportunities there. I think I told you before, among the other degrees I acquired in my adventures through higher education, I have a certificate in welding.
I love this fact.
Well,
you have a certificate in welding.
I have a certificate in welding.
But then how do you round that out for a student?
Well, and I say to people, I think it's welding is a perfectly good profession, but at some point you may want to own the welding shop, not just weld. And we can help you learn how to do that part of it. Above and beyond the technical skill of welding two pieces of metal together, we can help you figure out a business plan and a way of going through business that will allow you to be successful in the industry you chose, but in a different way. And
sounds like an entrepreneurship program.
It is exactly. You struck it. And as you know, that's one of our new highlights, that we can turn people with technical backgrounds who have a strong technical skill into entrepreneurs who can take that the next level for themselves and the society. I will tell you really quickly, at one of my prior stops, we had a very good program in opera. And a number of the students who wanted to be in opera weren't quite personally talented enough. So we added a business dimension to the opera program. So if you couldn't actually sing every day, you could help singers who did have careers as well. And I think all those kinds of things we can do at a place like this with a very nimble and effective way of reaching people who need that kind of addition to their lives.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with the new president of FGCU. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So having been in higher education since the 70s, I'm curious if you've noticed a difference in students entering college. Do you feel like they're as prepared now as they were in the past, more so?
I think it's quite bimodal. I think there was a time – you go back to my era, which is a long way back to the baby boomers, and we were all pretty homogeneous in terms of preparation. So that we could develop in higher education virtually a factory that took in very similar students and spit out very similar graduates. Now I think we have a much wider bandwidth of capabilities. Students who are very bright but come out of a weak public school system face an uphill battle. And then we have students who come in here from very enriched programs who really have a jump start on everybody else. And our job is to give every one of those, whichever end of that spectrum you're on, the best opportunity for success at a university. So I think it's become a much more heterogeneous, if that's a term I can use, a set of students with individualized needs that we have to adapt to and meet those needs on behalf of the individual students. We can no longer treat kind of the masses, but have to do it on a much more boutique way in some respects of advising, of planning programs, of offering programs, and all the amenities that go with that.
And when you talked about bimodal, there are kids that come from a lot of different backgrounds, mm-hmm. and they're put in a position for the first time probably in their life of being around people that are different from them.
Yep.
And we've seen on campuses across the country, and we've even seen it here at FGCU, there have been some people that have reacted with slurs, graffiti, things of that nature. How would you plan to handle those kinds of things when they come up in the future?
Well, I will certainly let it be known what I believe the value system is of this institution and my own value system. And just to speak to the term diversity, I believe that truly great universities and everyone who cares about them and part of the community embraces diversity in all of its forms. And that's what enriches the institution. It's not called a monoversity or a biversity. It's called a university for a reason. And we need to make sure that those people who want to bring that kind of rhetoric, hateful rhetoric, negative rhetoric, understand that this isn't the place for them. I'm not sure what place there is for them, but it isn't this place. And I'm going to make sure that I demonstrate that in my life, and I try to relate that to everybody I interact with. We've gotten, I think, to some extent mean-spirited in a lot of this, that it's not what makes a university great for anyone. But in every instance, people from different perspectives and backgrounds and races and gender and all that other things ought to be embraced by the place because it enriches all of our experience here.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's a delicate time there where people mm-hmm. are just beginning to try to be adults, and they're starting to learn how to express themselves. And sometimes they'll do it inappropriately.
They will, and we need to take every one of those examples and make it a teachable moment. There's both a reaction that has to be regulatory, but there's also a teachable moment here. And the extent that we can do that with everything we do, we're educators in the classroom and outside the classroom. We set examples which are part of education. We set a culture that's part of an education. We set a value system that's part of an education, and we need to emphasize that. But we always have to recognize that there are opportunities, even in negative times, to make an educational moment out of it. And we're going to work on that every day.
So how do you feel about FGCU as a resource within the community? For example, here at WGCU, we're part of FGCU, but we also reach from Marco Island to Sarasota and some points beyond. For non-students, it's more than a university, but it's still a smaller school than you've worked with recently. But does that add to kind of a feeling of community and involvement and responsibility for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you look at the name on this building, right? Not an alum, a person who embraced it because they saw the value to the community. And so I think that there's a message in that, that this community has embraced the institution because the institution has set out to serve that community. And this radio station, this broadcast system, is clearly part of that. I mean, WGCU is clearly part of our connection to the people of the region that are not only our constituents and stakeholders, they're our colleagues in so many ways. And it's a huge asset. I appreciate it enormously as a listener myself. And I will be a contributor too. I want to make that clear.
Because no pressure.
I'll put my money where my mouth is today for sure. But there's no question it means an enormous amount to have this capability to connect that many institutions do not.
And we've had a number of professors on our show that give us a lot of great insight, and they're doing some wonderful research here too.
I think that exposes the institution in ways we couldn't get otherwise, mm-hmm. and it gives those individuals an opportunity to bring their expertise to a whole new set of individuals that they wouldn't otherwise cross paths with.
Well, people wouldn't even know that they're doing this thing. So I want to change gears. I mentioned earlier that you came originally from Crosby, but your family moved to the suburbs of Minneapolis-St. Paul when you were in grade school?
Well, actually, when I was in the fifth grade.
And you mentioned that that changed your trajectory towards college. Do you remember what sparked your interest in higher education?
Well, I think part of it was that the suburban high school was a very good one, the suburban school district called St. Louis Park. It's one of the suburbs, western suburbs of the Minneapolis-St. Paul region. And what changed for me was I now had a set of peers who had expected to go to college, not work in the mines. And it changed my expectations. I mean, I started hanging out with people who are my friends to this day, several of whom actually are retired right here in this neighborhood, who gave me a different perspective on what you can be. And that was a transformational time in my life. I got there to St. Louis Park, and first of all, I discovered I had to work a little harder to be competitive, and I worked a little harder, not as hard as I probably could have. But I also began to deal with teachers and advisors at the high school, middle school, and even and high school level who began to say, no, the expectation is you're going to go on to college. So it just worked out that way. And I had a good friend who agreed to be my roommate for my freshman year. So we trotted off together to what was then called Mankato State College. Now it's Minnesota State Mankato. After 1 year, we discovered how different we were. We remained friends, but he wanted a neat room and I was not nearly as interested in that, among other things. But it was a matter of kind of having different expectations set for you than had been set before.
So how did your parents feel about you going off to school and then getting so involved in higher education throughout your life?
I think they were proud. I think that they were pleased I did. I think my parents thought that that was a good thing. But they were always mystified by it. My dad died just a year and a half ago at 90 plus, and he and I were very tight. But he never quite figured out what I did with all this time in college and what I did after I came out of college. I mean, in his mind, I was sort of like eventually like a high school principal.
Oh, okay.
And so that, you know, that's kind of the model he had in mind, that I went to work every day and I, you know, I gave directions to teachers and students were called into my office and chastised for misbehaving or whatever. So his view of my career was interesting. And my mother was very, very proud. She didn't even graduate from high school, but she became mayor of their little town and was quite prominent as a political figure.
Well, she was a go-getter.
She was a tough little Serbian lady who took on any challenge that came up. But she was quite proud of the fact that someone in our family had made it far enough to be recognized as even a minor leader of a major institution. So it was intriguing to them. And my mom died earlier, but later in life when I got to be president and chancellor, I flew my dad to a lot of events which he thought were just sensational. I mean, basketball – bowl games and basketball games and the national championship in baseball. So he saw some benefit for having hung in there and figured out what I did.
The swag, right? So you got married there at the beginning of your career and then you moved to so many disparate places. You went from New Mexico, Oregon, Florida. How did your family like moving around like that?
You know, I think everybody in the end enjoyed it. I think there was always the trepidation and the anxiety of a move. But my wife has been terrific. I mean, she's a great manager of our life. Excuse me. And my kids, I think, adjusted quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we got grandkids and we're hoping they'll come to visit and enjoy the place as much as we do.
Well, now they have a destination that they're looking forward to. I understand they're coming down in October and you have some plans for them to be down and visit all the time. It's always great taking the grandkids.
Listen. And they're so educational for me. I mean, they see the world so clearly that I get a chance to see it again clearly.
It's so great, isn't it?
Yeah,
kids are awesome.
Absolutely.
So school starts pretty soon. Do you have any special plans as the students are starting to come back to campus for fall semester?
Well, I'm going to certainly participate in move-in day. I love to do that. So my plan is to be out with a golf cart and water. There was a time in my career where I carried television sets up three flights of stairs. But I'm not doing that anymore. But
I am going to
be out. I'm going to be out welcoming people to campus. I intend, because I love the campus life, to be as engaged in it as time and people's interest allows. But I'm certainly going to be here to welcome everybody back. And wherever I can to get into living groups and others to let them know how much we appreciate them being part of the community. Parents, boosters, but students most certainly. So I'm really looking forward to it. I've been meeting with parents during the orientation time, even for a few minutes. And it just reminds me how exciting this place can be when fall rolls around.
It's good to be back on campus. Even though we don't have turning leaves, it's still fall.
No, but the energy level and the great sense of anticipation and excitement and trepidation and fear and all those other things gets our enthusiasm up for staying in what is a wonderful place to work and be and contribute.
Well, welcome back to campus and welcome to FGCU.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great place to be, and I've been continually amazed, even in my early introduction, about how far this place has come, how fast this place has come, and how deeply people care about it.
Yeah, definitely do. Well, I want to thank our guest, FGCU President Dr. Mike Martin. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been great getting to know you.
Yeah, I appreciate it enormously. Thank you very much.
Coming up, we've had a look ahead to the future of FGCU with its new president, Mike Martin. Coming up next, we'll listen back to an interview we did with outgoing president Wilson Bradshaw. Stay with us. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live.